First case this morning is United States against Goh. Counsel for the defense.
Good morning. May it please the court. I am Eugene Hand, counsel for the appellant, specialist Benny Goldwood. We're here before this court on two issues today. First one is a granted issue, that is whether a service member is entitled to combined credit under 18 U.S.C. 3585. The second one is a specified issue as to whether a military judge has authority to calculate and apply pretrial combined credit in light of the Supreme Court's decision of U.S. versus Wilson. Now, first of all, appellant is entitled to 117 days of credit under 18 U.S.C. 3585. However, because of the calculation error by regional...
Does that statute apply of its own force?
Yes, Your Honor. The statute does apply.
How so?
Well, there are three reasons for that, Your Honor. First of all, the plain language of the statute indicates that it applies. And second...
How so?
Well, Your Honor, the as we all know, the judicial inquiry to a meeting of an ambiguous statute should really stand on the plain language of the statute by itself. And if we consider the predecessor statute...
Are you arguing that because the reference to the code was deleted, it therefore replies of its own force?
Yes, Your Honor.
So what about 3551A, which seems to exempt sentencing under the code from the whole sentencing chapter?
Sorry, Your Honor.
18 U.S.C. 3551A, at the beginning of the chapter relating to sentencing, which includes 3585, appears to exempt sentencing under the UCMJ from the act from the whole chapter.
Well, Your Honor, even if that's the case, for the same reason that this court and Allen have stated the predecessor statute apply, and that is basically the Secretary of Defense voluntarily adopted to have the statute apply to the military members as
well. So even if it doesn't apply by its own terms, which is the question I ask you, the Secretary of Defense made it apply.
Yes, sir.
And where does Secretary of Defense get this authority?
Well, now, as far as whether not exactly clear on...
Where does the Secretary of Defense get the authority to do this? Did the President... The President has authority under 36. Did the President delegate it to him?
I believe that would be the case, Your Honor.
How so? Can you point to any regulation or document in which he did so?
Your Honor, I apologize, but I do not. I'm unable to point to a specific regulation or document at this time right now. However, this court in U.S. v. Allen basically, for the same reason, said that the predecessor statute applies to military service members as well, just because of what the Secretary...
So basically your reliance is upon Allen, the rationale therein.
Yes, sir. But that, and the third reason would be the government conceded and agrees with us that this 3585 would apply to service members as well. So for those all three reasons, the plain language of the statute, the Secretary, and the voluntary adoption by the Secretary of the Defense, and also for the government's agreement with the appellant in this case that it does apply, for all those three reasons, 18 U.S.C. 3585 would apply to service members. Now,
do you think that your stronger argument is that we should rely on the Secretary of Defense instruction, or that your stronger reliance is on the plain language of the statute?
Well, considering this court's reasoning, Allen, I believe the Secretary of Defense's voluntary adoption would be the stronger argument in this case.
And would you agree that the Supreme Court, that neither the Supreme Court nor the statute have ruled or addressed specifically the issue of state confinement with respect to 3585 credit?
Yes, this is a as far, yes, Your Honor. As far as credit under 3585,
but the Secretary of Defense references the Bureau of Prisons regulation, and that does address giving credit for state confinement, correct?
Yes, ma'am. And although the defense DOD instruction does not specifically, I do not recall whether it specifically cites to Bureau of Prisons regulation. It states that the procedure for computing sentences would be conforming with the DOJ's procedures.
Fair enough. I think you were about to tell us about a computation error by the Regional Defense Council. Would you go back to that point, please?
Yes, ma'am. Under the statute, Helen would be entitled to 117 days of credit. However, the regional confinement facility forgot to exclude 28 days of post-trial period, 28 days of confinement, pursuant to RCM 1113B2. Therefore, Helen would be satisfied with 89 days of credit. That is the pre-trial confinement credit that he did not receive.
And you're talking there about the period of confinement from the date of the court-martial until he was returned to military authority, which was counted in the calculation done at the military prison and which was not deferred by the military, by the convening authority?
Yes, ma'am, that is correct. Under RCM 1113D2, exclusion of those of that 28 days would be mandatory. However, the regional confinement facility, you're looking at the sentence computation sheet, do not reflect that. So, in effect,
he's already gotten credit for that time.
Yes, ma'am. Albeit it wasn't particularly under 3585, he did basically de facto receive that credit.
So all you're asking for now is the 89 days.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And the government agrees that you're entitled to those. To that.
Yes, ma'am.
So why don't you move on to the second argument?
As far as the second issue as to whether a military judge has authority to calculate and apply the credit on a 3585, appellant is really as indifferent as to really who applies the credit under the statute. As long as, of course, he receives all the credit that is entitled under the statute, as far as who actually does it, appellant is indifferent. However, for two reasons, it seems military judge would not have the authority to calculate and apply the credit under the statute. And basically, those two reasons are the practical issue of military judge being incapable of, trial court level judge being incapable of knowing when the conditions will be satisfied for applying the credit.
What do you mean by that?
Well, Your Honor, under 3585, specifically the unrelated crimes credit that Grover is entitled to under 3585B2, there's really three conditions that need to be met before he can receive the credit. And one of them is that accused time in detention had not already been credited against any other sentence. Now, just as the the Supreme Court in Wilson pointed out.
But it has to be time not credited against any other sentence at the time the sentence is executed. So at the point in time that this calculation needs to be taken, that's the point in time that they look to see whether it's been credited. At least that's what the statute looks like it's saying.
Yes, ma'am. And the point in time in which that calculation is supposed to be done is when a prisoner is received at the confinement facility. Now, that is one of the practical issues that, again, the Supreme Court in Wilson had discussed. And that same practical issue would be present in the military justice system as well. The military judge at the time, military judge in certain circumstances would not know whether the state court would give appellant credit for those time that he will spend in confinement, in detention, post-trial. And because of that same difficulty, practical difficulty, it seems the military judge, just as the federal district court judge was incapable, it seems the military judge would be incapable of calculating the credit also. And the second reason is that DOD instruction, again, DOD instruction stated that the military will conform to the procedure followed by the Justice Department, and that is calculation of the credit and when the prisoner is received in a federal prison. Now, however, as also the government stated, and we agree, the Wilson case is really not controlling on the military justice matter. So for that reason, it is possible that this court could fashion some rule allowing a military judge to calculate and apply credit under 3585.
Well, would you agree with this proposition, which is that at the point in time the sentence to confinement commences for purposes of the military justice system on the date that it's adjudged, correct? Unless it's deferred.
I would not agree with that statement, Your Honor. The reason for that is because under 3585A, this commence is a specifically defined term, and that is a sentence to commencement. Commencement is considered when defendant is received in custody awaiting transportation or arrives at the.
Does commence and begin mean, do defense and begin mean the same thing? Does commence a sentence and begin a sentence, do those have the same meanings?
No. Begins to run and commence do not mean two different things. And we know that because, again, under 3585, commence is specifically defined. And furthermore, this court had previously stated that and if we look at the previous decision of this court as for what begins to run means, that would be contrary to what is defined under 3585
okay.
Specifically.
Well, would you agree that 3585 doesn't tell us really anything about who should be calculating the credit?
Yes, ma'am, that is correct.
Okay, and so, well, I appreciate, you know, the analogies that you're drawing and the distinctions that you can bring up. It seems, in some sense, they're a little bit hyper-technical when Article 57 talks about when sentences begin here, 3585 talks about when sentences commence for purposes of the federal system, and Wilson was concerned with the difficulties inherent with a judge calculating time based on when sentences commence or could commence in the federal system. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that is correct, ma'am. I would agree with that.
Okay. So, I'm sorry.
What do we do with the language then in RCM 113D2A that specifically says in the military system that the sentence commences when the sentence is adjudged, that the time the military starts counting the sentence is the date that it's adjudged? Is that gone under these circumstances?
Your Honor, I believe that, again, just because it was term commence is different from the term begins to run. Number one, those two don't mean the same thing. And also, even if under Article 57, the military prisoner's sentence is considered to begins to run at the adjournment of the court-martial under 57A, as well as RCM 1113, that time when a military prisoner is in state confinement is specifically excluded. So, in effect, the starting date might be slightly different, the end effect is really the same because of the way that Article 57 and 57A, as well as RCM 1113, applies in the military setting.
Now, assuming arguendo that 3585 applies, B2 states that you only get credit as a result of any other charge for which the defendant was arrested after the commission of the offense for which the sentence was imposed.
Yes, Your Honor.
Here it looks like you've got a situation where you've got a bunch of charges and specs that occurred before, and you've got a bunch of charges and specs that occurred after. How do you parse that with regard to confinement credit?
Your Honor, I'm not exactly sure about your question, but if I could...
You got a bunch of additional charges and specs, which occurred in 2005 after his arrest. In other words, he was arrested before the commission of the offense for which the sentence was imposed. How do you parse that?
Well, as long as appellant is sentenced to confinement under court-martial for, and some of the offenses for which he received confinement occurred before his arrest, as in this case. I see no problem with that, Your Honor.
You mean, say you've got one before and 20 after, he still gets full credit?
Yes, Your Honor.
Isn't that a ridiculous way of interpreting the statute?
I'm not sure whether I follow your...
Well, no. The statute seems to say that you only get credit, you know, in B2. You only get credit for certain charges. Here you have a situation where some of the charges fall into that category and some of them don't. And my question is, how do you parse that with requests, you know, assuming arguendo the statute applies at all, how do you parse that with respect to confinement credit? You can't, you know, he was sentenced to a unitary sentence that covers all the charges and specs. You can't tweeze them out and say, well, this much of the sentence applies to that and that much of the sentence applies to this. So, you know, you're saying basically that if there's one, it's good enough?
Yes, Your Honor, and the reason for that would be it seems 3585 is not really a... I believe what it's trying to do is basically to prevent anyone from really being in the confinement for which that person was not sentenced. And regardless of whether there were just one crime that was committed prior to his arrest or whether it was 100, if Talent was confined and for whatever specific, you know, period of time and he did not receive any credit for that, as in this case, all he received was probation, then that time should really count for something. I believe that's really what 35
is. Can you point to anything in the legislative history that upholds that interpretation?
Sorry, I apologize. I do not have any such.
Counsel, this may take you beyond your expiration of time, but I hope I'll be short on it. There are at least three different statutory provisions of the code involved here, Article 14 and two parts of Article 57. There is a repealed federal statute and a current federal statute involved, several different cases of our court, and as well, Department of Defense instructions and provisions of the Manifold Courts Martial. What precisely is the error that is complained of in this case by the defense? What particular point in time is the error at which you're complaining, and who made the error?
Well, it seems in this particular case there were definitely error made at the post-trial stage and when 1105 submission was made to the convening authority.
Were you complaining of an ineffective assistance of counsel or an SJA error? What's the error? Who made the error and what error did they make?
First of all, Your Honor, it seems the military judge did make an error when the military judge failed to read the entire statute. And secondly, it seems the...
I'm not concerned about what contemplation people may have had at different points of time in the process about what may or may not be the law. What specific error was made and who made it? What are you complaining about in this case and what relief do you want?
Your Honor, again, appellant is requesting 89 days of credit. He should have gotten under 3585. And
who made the error in not giving 89 days of credit?
Seems it will be convening authority. However, also the military judge made an error in...
Well, he ruled that there was no credit, right? You asked for credit, credit was asked for a trial, and the military judge said no.
Yes, ma'am, and the military judge made that error also. Now, whether the military judge actually has the authority to apply and calculate the credit or not, when it's in fact brought up before the military judge in a motion, the military judge has...
But you're satisfied as long as the convening authority made that error and somebody corrects the convening authority's error in it. That's your position in this case?
Yes, Your Honor. As
okay.
Long as
now, my next question is, does the government agree or disagree that there are 89 days credit at issue in this case?
Government agrees with that, Your Honor.
And what's the discussion in the briefs about the period beyond the 89 days? What's that have to do with anything?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
There's a discussion in both briefs about the period after the 89 days, the 23 days that follow after May 31st, and the period from 23 to 28 June. Is that a matter in dispute? Is it a matter in which you're asking for any relief in this case?
Your Honor, that matter is no longer in dispute because after we received government's brief upon consideration, another careful look at the sentence computation sheet, as we initially stated, it seems that credit was, in fact, given because it was not taken out. So that is no longer in dispute.
So that counted towards his service of time, so it's not an issue?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
So is it necessary for us to determine, address the start point issue? It sounds like everybody's in agreement on everything except things that are not before us now.
Yes, sir, that is correct. It seems that we all seem to be agreeing that 89 days is what appellant is entitled to, it seems, as far as in this particular case.
So is there anything for us to decide?
Other than the 3585, it applies, and that should be given, sir.
Why should we decide that if you're all in agreement?
Well, you
are. You understand what I'm asking? It seems like there's complete agreement, and what's needed here is, I don't know, it's a sidebar between you two.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Well, rather than an opinion from us about something that's not before us.
Yes, sir. Well, it seems the Army Court, Army Court of Appeals did not agree with us, so that's why we're here before you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel for the government.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Captain Michael Pond, along with Colonel Denise Lind. I represent the United States in this matter. The government agrees that 18 U.S.C. 3585b2, like subsection B1, applies to service members sentenced to confinement.
Just to be clear, are you saying that the statute applies by on the force of the statute itself, or are you making the argument that you make in your brief, which is it that the Department of Defense instruction has voluntarily said that they will follow the same procedures?
The latter. We believe the logic of Allen compels that conclusion. However, United States v. Wilson does not preclude military judges from calculating and awarding confinement credit. Although Wilson was a sound interpretation of federal sentencing provisions, those provisions are not analogous to those found in the UCMJ. With limited exceptions, military sentences to confinement begin to run at adjournment, and as a result, the problems which gave rise to the decision in Wilson, and indeed dictated the result in Wilson, are largely absent in the military, thus rendering that case inapplicable to the military justice system.
What is in dispute at this time following appellant's oral argument?
Well, at this point, Your Honor, the decision of the Army Court of Criminal Appeals in which it did not award him credit continues to stand. So absent an opinion from this court, setting that aside, he's not going to get the credit to which he is statutorily entitled. So I guess that's the dispute.
So the court erred? Did the court err?
The Army Court of Criminal Appeals?
Yes.
We believe it did.
Okay.
Okay, and I want to go back to something you just said, because I asked you to, at the beginning, whether you were saying that the statute required it or whether it was required by the Department of Defense instruction. You just said he didn't get credit that he was statutorily entitled to. So I'm just asking you to be precise.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah.
And that was, she did not state that as clearly
yeah.
as
she did. You do not agree that 3585 applies of its own force.
That's correct, Your Honor. We were aware of 3551, and essentially what they've done from 3568 is simply move that language to the general provisions
right.
of the chapter so that it covers everything.
So it's still statutorily exempted.
Correct.
Well, do you think that 3551 stands for so broad of a proposition, or do you think that it simply, since what it's talking about is authorized sentences, and of course authorized sentences in the military justice system are different than authorized sentences in the federal system. So I guess what I'm asking, which interpretation makes more sense given where this language is?
Well, we were looking at the plain language of subsection A, and it says, except as otherwise specifically provided, a defendant who has been found guilty of an offense other than the Uniform Code of Military Justice, shall be sentenced in accordance with the provisions of this chapter, one of which is 3585. So that's how we read it, as meaning what it says, essentially, Your Honor. I am going to skip to issue two if there are no further questions on issue one, and we can return to that if the court so desires. Again, our position is that, I guess the starting point of the analysis is what is the scope of this credit under B2, and there is a set point in which it becomes applicable and a set point in which it ceases to be applicable, and that beginning point is the arrest, the detention that occurs thereafter, and the ending point is the commencement of the sentence. And as we stated in our brief, 3585A defines the latter in federal civilian criminal law, but that provision is simply inoperative in the military by virtue of Article 57, which sets the sentence commencement at adjournment unless it is deferred. So to recreate or reproduce the scenario that the Supreme Court confronted in Wilson, it would require not simply the existence of state proceedings after adjournment, but some mechanism for deferring or postponing the commencement of the sentence in such a way that you pushed out or pushed forward his
eligibility.
Are
the parties in agreement that the 89 days are all pre-court martial time?
Yes, sir.
So is it necessary for us to address this commencement issue?
It is not specifically necessary, I don't think, to...
Why isn't it advisory at this point? That is... unless the period following the announcement of the sentence is in dispute between the parties, what issue do we have before us regarding any sentence credit following completion of the court-martial?
Well, Your Honor, there is currently, it would seem, a split among the CCAs in terms of whether this credit does or does not apply.
I understand that. There are lots of splits at the CCAs, but until there are adverse interests of the parties before us in a particular case on application of a credit that applies after the court-martial sentence has been announced, would we ever have anything but an advisory opinion before us?
It's a good question, Your Honor. To be honest, we weren't aware that the 89 days would no longer be in dispute until 10 minutes ago.
So I understand
that. The 28 days.
Yeah.
Counsel, is it possible, and this is related to the question about commencement, when the sentence commences, is it possible to distinguish the Supreme Court's decision in Wilson without taking that precise issue into account? And if you don't understand my question, let me know and I'll rephrase it.
I think it's possible to distinguish the court's opinion in Wilson simply on the basis that they were interpreting a different section of the statute, which is not applicable to us. You're saying, is it possible to accept 3585A and for Wilson to nonetheless not apply?
No, I'm talking about something different, which is this is issue two. All right, who has the authority to determine what the credit is, right? And initially, the appellant's position was, and still is to some extent, that Wilson stands for the proposition that a military judge cannot do it because in Wilson they said the judge could not do it, right?
Correct.
And the argument is, well, that's a different case because it's a different system because there we can't tell with any certainty when the sentence is going to commence, right?
Correct.
So my question now is, can we decide that issue and distinguish Wilson in this case without noting the fact that in the military justice system, the sentence begins or commences the date that the court-martial adjudges it?
And when you say decide that issue, you're referring to?
Issue number two. The second issue that's presented, which is whether or not the military judge can decide.
Well, sure. I mean, because the military judges, by statute, I mean, all you have to do is look to Article 51, RCM 801 alpha. I mean, military judges are vested with authority to rule upon all questions of law and interlocutory questions arising during the proceedings. And as recently as espoused that, this court held that the proper application of credit for confinement is a question of law. So This is not an area in which has been in confusion before today. Military judges, clearly, by statute, by the RCMs, have the authority to rule on this issue. The only question is whether Wilson somehow invalidated that, and our position is that it did not.
Is the confusion the result of Wilson, or is the confusion the result of trying to shoehorn military procedure into a Title 18 statute that pretty obviously wasn't written with it in mind?
It is undoubted that any time we are trying to apply a Title 18...
Leaving aside the question of the administrative application.
Sure. This is a square peg trying to be shoved into a round hole here.
And thank you.
What we're trying to do is affect the intent of the Secretary of Defense in such a way that does not run contrary or set up a conflict with Title 10. And our view is that it's just possible to do that, but you can't do it if you try to bring in all federal law, including 3585A.
So what do you do? How do you pick and choose?
It's a good question, Your Honor.
By analogy, as I ask appellant's counsel, some of this is before and some of this is after, and how do you parse it? I'm not asking you that question, although I might. I'm just doing it illustratively.
Yes, Your Honor. We would just note that at least one case, if you read the Air Force's Sherman decision, only one of the offenses for which he was convicted by court-martial preceded civilian arrest, and they applied the credit in that scenario.
Okay.
I'm sorry?
No, go ahead.
So even in the extreme situation,
He got the whole ball wide.
Okay. And that's an issue we thought about prior to today.
Is this a remedial statute that ought to be liberally construed?
It is not clear to the government what Congress's intent was.
Well, and it wasn't clear to appellant either. So go ahead. Thank you.
Well, do you think with respect to the second issue that it's possible to simply state that the military judge can determine with certainty on the day that pretrial confinement credit needs to be determined what pretrial confinement credit is due?
Yes, Your Honor. We would agree with that proposition.
And the worst-case scenario is that the possibility remains that that time will be double-credited by a state court, but that's the state court's problem.
Well, not just that, Your Honor, but that specific scenario can be addressed effectively by a military judge, because what the judge can do, let's say the sentence, the convening authority has entered into a pretrial agreement with the accused deferring the sentence to confinement, so it is going to get pushed out, and there are state proceedings pending at adjournment. The military judge, our position is not that the military judge has exclusive authority to calculate and apply these credits, just that he has that authority. So the accused could always petition the convening authority after adjournment of a court-martial, for the credit, or if the state trial still hadn't occurred by the time the convening authority acted, he could ask for relief on appeal. But
if the military judge was giving the credit, it would have been given at the end of the trial.
But if the military judge's concern is that he's going to get double credit and he wants to ensure that he isn't double credited, then he can simply, it's possible he could say something on the record to the effect of he's entitled to the credit so long as it is not given by some state court.
But where under 3585B2 is that an option? By its terms, it seems to say that you decide any credit that hasn't already been credited.
We would agree with that. I guess we were just raising kind of a secondary argument.
Making it more complicated.
Making it more complicated.
Yes. No, not good.
But we certainly do agree that not credited means not yet credited at the time that matters.
Counsel, I have two questions, and these are not rhetorical questions, or at least not intended to be rhetorical questions. First, to once again confirm that there's no dispute between the parties as to what relief should be granted in this case, and that's 89 days credit.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And secondly, with respect to the formula or formulas for calculating credit under the DOD instruction, whatever statutes it may or may not incorporate, that any interpretive questions as to how to do those calculations can all be resolved by the Secretary of Defense with respect to any further guidance the Secretary would wish to give.
That is also correct.
Thank you.
If there are no further questions, I believe I've exhausted my knowledge at the risk of being repetitive. I'll just conclude my presentation.
You may do so. Thank you.
Again, the government agrees that Section B2 applies by virtue of Allen and this court's language in the United States v. Smith, which reaffirmed that it did. Wilson does not preclude military judges from calculating and awarding pretrial confinement credit for the reason we articulated. That concludes the government presentation.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense wish to offer any rebuttal?
Your Honor, just to briefly state that appellant's position in the, as far as the second issue goes, the appellant is indifferent as to who actually does apply the pretrial confinement credit as long as it is given. And as the government counsel also simply stated, even if it is the military judge that decides to calculate the credit, the military judge would not have the sole authority to do so. We would still have that authority to apply the credit as well. That's all we have to say.
Thank you, counsel. Thank both counsel for your presentations today, and the court will take this case under advisement. We'll stand in recess until 9:40 a.m. this morning.
All rise. The court stands in recess until 9:40.